Welcome to episode 11 of Physicians Beyond the Bedside. Today we are going to talk about jobs and roles for physicians in the pharmaceutical industry. Many physicians are not aware of the types of roles for physicians within pharma. There are many similarities, but there are also very significant differences from clinical roles. Working in these roles does appeal to many physicians. This may be a non-clinical role that appeals to you. Stay tuned to the end of the episode for a new special offer. Hello and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Bedside. I am your host, Dr. Norm Chapin. Beyond the Bedside is a podcast that will help you find a non-clinical role and take your career in new, rewarding, and sometimes unanticipated directions. I'm very happy that you are here to learn about opportunities beyond the bedside. It is fair to say that working in the pharmaceutical industry is very different from working in individual patient care positions, and physicians contemplating a position in pharma should be aware that the transition and the transitional period could be very challenging. Today, we're going to discuss the opportunities that exist in the pharmaceutical industry and related industries for physicians. So, what are some of the similarities between clinical jobs and jobs within the pharmaceutical industry? Well, the first is that physicians in clinical roles and in pharmacy are both committed to improving the lives of patients. Medical knowledge and continuous medical education are both very important attributes for physicians in these areas. Collaboration with academic physicians and experts across different fields is also important for physicians in pharmaceutical jobs. Scientific rigor is a key to success in both roles. But there are significant differences, so let's talk about some of the significant differences between the two roles. First of all, in most cases, working in the pharmaceutical industry does not allow direct patient contact. You have an ability to impact patients on a much larger scale. Obviously, if you're involved in the release of a new drug or a new medication that is successful, that impact can occur in multiples that would be impossible in a patient care practice or a patient care setting. Projects are also much more long-term, and the outputs from your efforts will be much more indirect. You will not have that immediate feedback that you have when you're working in your clinical practice. You also have frequent interactions with non-healthcare professionals, especially professionals who come from non-clinical backgrounds completely, such as the regulatory industry, governmental agencies, etc. The pharmaceutical industry was impacted during the pandemic, but as the need for a vaccine grew, and as telehealth took off during the pandemic, the number of prescriptions rose again, and the amount of money flowing into pharma to search for a vaccine for COVID really preserved the industry and kept the industry quite strong during the COVID pandemic. There really are three different drug segments, all of which are projected to grow in 2021, although at slightly different paces. We anticipate that the generic drug makers, what we might call small pharma, are going to expect a positive growth of 2%, whereas big pharmaceutical companies like Johnson & Johnson, Merck, AstraZeneca are projected to see an 8% growth. The biotech drug makers are anticipated to witness a growth of 21% during 2021. And we see the same thing when we look at the profit margins. There's expected to be a 10% profit margin for generic drug makers globally, 30% for big pharma, and 45% for successful biotech firms. This all suggests that opportunities within pharmaceutical companies are something that would be worth exploring for physicians who are interested in finding non-clinical roles to either supplement their clinical income or to replace it. So where are the jobs? First of all, obviously, the majority of the jobs for physicians will be in big pharma, but there are also opportunities in smaller pharmaceutical companies. Another option to look at are contract research organizations, or CROs. These companies provide consulting to pharmaceutical companies to help them do phase one through phase three clinical research trials, and sometimes even help them do the phase four trials, which are aftermarket clinical trials. Another option is to look at regulatory agencies such as the FDA, and also biotech firms, as I mentioned earlier, are predicted to do quite well during the upcoming fiscal year. So what are the types of jobs that exist within the pharmaceutical industry that physicians can be successful in? There are several jobs that I want to mention today, the first of which is a medical monitor. A medical monitor is involved in really the clinical trial levels, whether it's a phase one, two, or three clinical trial. The physician is employed by the pharmaceutical company or the CRO, and they look at the clinical course for the patient using the summaries that are reported to them by the principal investigator or by other sources. They often will have some dialogue with the site physician or the principal investigator, but they really don't have any patient contact. They try to determine whether the administration of the drug contributed to any adverse event, although we'll talk a little bit in the next few minutes about pharmacovigilance positions or pharmacy safety positions. There is a little bit of overlap between the medical monitor and the pharmacovigilance physicians. Medical monitors really also are involved in protocol design and all the way through the clinical trial until the study closeout. During protocol design, the monitor could be called upon to assess inclusion criteria, exclusion criteria. They could also weigh the efficacy and safety assessments of the protocol, including how the efficacy of the drug is going to be determined and how adverse events will be assessed and collected, and even sometimes what endpoints of the protocol are going to be, and really help the researchers, the scientific researchers, understand whether those endpoints are going to be meaningful to practicing physicians. They really interact quite actively with the investigative sites, although they don't have direct patient contacts, and they do address safety issues across the study from the sites and the study team. As I mentioned, there is a little bit of overlap between them in a position we're going to talk about next. They will also review what we call line listings for coded adverse events to verify that the medical dictionary and regulatory activities, terminology, and nomenclature has been used consistently across those events. The next position that physicians often are interested in within the pharmaceutical industry are what we call a safety director or a pharmacovigilance expert. This is another field where physicians have a tremendously important role and are tremendously well-suited to these positions. These physicians also are involved at the clinical trial level, usually when they can be involved in any phase of clinical trial, one through three, and they might even remain involved in some of the post-marketing or the phase four clinical trials. Again, physicians are employed or work for a pharmaceutical company or a clinical research organization that is providing consulting services to a pharmaceutical company. And during the phases of the clinical trial, they will have the opportunity to review the clinical course for patients and, again, have some site dialogue or some dialogue, rather, with the primary investigator who is at the site. The main responsibility of the safety director or the pharmacovigilance physician is to determine whether the administration of a drug or a compound contributed to an adverse event. Physicians in these roles oftentimes look at a tremendous amount of data as well. They will look at analytics and safety data, summaries of events, and really try to identify, again, whether or not there's a cause and effect between a patient's response during the trial, any of the study medications that they are currently taking. Many physicians who are interested in these roles, in order to be considered for a role in patient safety, it is oftentimes helpful to have some experience with clinical research, to be involved with understanding medication safety and working in the area of medication safety. You can also complete fellowships in pharmacovigilance, or while you're gaining experience as a physician within the pharmaceutical industry, you can work for a CRO or a company that provides pharmacovigilance consulting to a pharmaceutical company in a position that doesn't necessarily require a medical degree. You can also start in areas of the pharmaceutical industry that don't require the amount of analytical experience or pharmaceutical safety experience that the patient safety director requires, and then you work your way into a role within pharmacovigilance. Working for the Food and Drug Administration is also an opportunity to gain some experience or completing another relevant residency. Many safety directors have a master's in public health, but that isn't the only program that can be a great background for you. Looking at, or having a background, I should say, in epidemiology, management of drug development, or just a strong background in clinical research during your residency or medical school can provide you with the background that will convince a pharmaceutical company that you would be a good fit for their position.
I have a special offer for you today. I have created a list of the top 10 skills physicians need to be maximally effective in leadership roles. The skills I included on the list have been studied and found to increase the effectiveness of leaders in all organizations. You need to cultivate these skills when you assume a leadership role. Physicians are leaders not only in clinical settings, but in non-clinical settings as well. These skills will benefit you, whether you are at the bedside or beyond. Please visit my website at beyondthebedside.net/top10leadership skills for your free copy of this excellent resource today. I will also place a link to this resource in the show notes. Feel free to click on that in the show notes below.
Another background that can be and can lead into being hired as a safety director is working as a freelance medical writer, working specifically to write about or to help pharmaceutical companies or CROs develop the documentation that they need to support the application to the FDA, for example. Another position within the pharmaceutical industry that is attractive to many physicians is the medical director. Medical director is typically a physician who provides their medical knowledge and expertise in the day-to-day operations of the clinical research studies. Again, looking at summaries of data and trying to understand the relationship between events and the dosage of the medication, the frequency that the medication is being provided, the route that it's being provided, etc., just is a large part of what the medical director would do, but it is not, they're often involved in a broader sense than a medical monitor and have more responsibility for many different products at the same time. The clinical director's role or medical director's role is at the head of the team. They are disseminating information to make sure that the studies are getting done and are implemented according to the standard operating procedures and that all the guidelines that are part of the regulations that govern the industry. This person, the medical director or clinical director, really drives the advancement of a compound most times. And then for that one compound, you want to get that out into sites and into larger clinical trials. This is what most companies refer to as the medical affairs side of their organization. And as such, it's really focused on sending people into the field to gather data. The medical monitor is much more inwardly focused, and the medical director or clinical director in the medical affairs organization is really more outwardly focused, and there's a huge communication with the principal investigators and a stronger connection to the commercialization of the product in most cases. Sometimes the medical affairs side will go in and call on physicians along with sales or marketing representatives as well. Another area in the pharmaceutical industry or the clinical research organizations for physicians is medical writing. Medical writing is an entirely different type of writing than we're used to. It's very different, for example, than documenting in a patient's record, doing the types of clinical writing that we do. It's a very technical, scientific writing. If any of you have ever done a PhD or an advanced degree that was very much science related, you probably have some experience as a medical writer. There is a lot of information available for you if this is something that you would be interested in. And this is actually an opportunity for some physicians to enter into the pharmaceutical industry on a part-time basis, working remotely and at kind of an entry level so that they can see if they like doing this type of work and if they would like to advance further in this industry. There's also a position called the medical science liaison that many pharmaceutical companies use. And this, in contrast to the medical director, the medical science liaison is really a position that is externally focused or hourly focused. This physician will be looking at products that already have their FDA approval or clearances, and they're being utilized by physicians. They may be part of a phase four trial. The medical science liaison takes the information that the company has learned during phase one, two, and three trials. They share that with the physicians and develop relationships with key opinion leaders, helping them understand just how the new product or treatment is going to benefit their patients and why it is superior or may be superior to other treatments that they have been using or are currently using. The medical science liaison obviously works much more closely with the sales force than the clinical director or medical director. But again, there is some overlap between these two positions, but I'm just speaking in generalities. But in many times, the sales force will come back with questions to the medical liaison on a more clinical academic level, and they will use the medical liaison to help them address those kinds of questions with physicians. Medical science liaison may also gather feedback from clinicians who are using the medication about how the product could be improved or used in a different frequency or dose range that may benefit the patient population that it was intended to treat, or even maybe a different patient population or in a completely different indication, what we may refer to commonly as off-label uses if they don't go back to the FDA to get approval for that indication. And in those situations, the medical science liaison may help oversee clinical trials that really prove that this new indication works and that this drug is a safe and effective choice, as it was shown to be in the original trials. Another area that physicians can help pharmaceutical companies is in the area of regulatory medicine. Physicians in the regulatory medicine department will help coordinate the production and submission of applications and supporting documents to regulatory agencies. It is a form of technical medical writing, but the new drug applications or NDAs and marketing authorization applications, MAAs, will benefit in many cases from having a physician involved in composing and writing those documents. And this is an area that some physicians really find to be enjoyable and rewarding. So let's talk a little bit about when you should consider a change from clinical medicine into a pharmaceutical industry. As I've said before on the podcast, whether it was about the timing to get your MBA or making a change to a non-clinical career, generally, I would say it is recommended or advisable that you have had at least 5 or 10 years of experience as a clinician before you make this type of transition. This isn't a hard and fast rule, but I think in general, you're more likely to be of value to the pharmaceutical company or the clinical research organization, or if you're working for a regulatory agency, if you have enough time under your belt in a clinical role so that you have credibility and so that you really understand exactly how a normal practicing physician makes decisions about using medications in his practice and what information they would need to know in order to adopt a new therapy for their patients. I think that if you've had a career in preclinical research and development, what we would call bench work, then that information can be very valuable if you are going to be involved in the pre-phase one trials. But I would say most physicians who make this transition are clinicians who've been involved in clinical research. One of the most valuable attributes for a physician is their profound medical and scientific knowledge, obviously, but also physicians should have very strong verbal and written communication skills. They should have good leadership skills. They should have the capability to work with highly functional teams. And all of these skills and others are included in the top 10 leadership skills that physicians can cultivate and develop, which is available on my website, physiciansbeyondthebedside.com. Please take the opportunity to visit my website and provide me with the opportunity to send you this valuable resource. In addition to the leadership and decision-making skills, business acumen, some business background can be very beneficial, especially if you are working in certain areas of the pharmaceutical industry, such as the medical liaison office, or the clinical director or medical director roles. Some practical steps that I'd like to share with you that you can do before or while you're attempting to transition to a job in the pharmaceutical industry or in the clinical research organizations is, first of all, make sure that your LinkedIn profile really showcases all the relevant skills that you have so that recruiters can see exactly what your background is and how you can bring value to the pharmaceutical industry. Also on the LinkedIn profile, I would make sure that you indicate that you are okay if recruiters reach out and contact you if you are considering transitioning into a new role. Secondly, I would reach out to physicians on LinkedIn or other sites that you frequent and try to get a better idea about what their day-to-day work looks like. You may be able to find a mentor in this way for your career change, but you will certainly be able to get a better sense prior to your interviews as to what the job involves, and it may actually help you prepare for your interview. Thirdly, narrow down a few different types of roles. Of the ones that we've mentioned today, and in your research, you may find others. My list is by no means all-inclusive, obviously, because there are very many different ways that physicians can participate with the pharmaceutical industry, but use the websites of Johnson & Johnson, of AstraZeneca. Take a look at what kind of projects they're focusing on. Don't forget to look at the medical device industry, which in many ways would be a very similar and translatable skill as compared to the pharmaceutical industries. But I think that's another way that you can narrow down what you're really interested in by finding out what the job is like, and it will give you an understanding of where your skills, where your passions, and your background fit in the best. Another thing that you should do as a fourth important activity while you're considering this transition, again, is doing more research. I'm going to include a number of links in the show notes for this episode that you will be able to use. I have run across, while I was doing the research, I have run across several really valuable guides, Breaking into Pharma, Essential Steps to a Successful Career in Pharma, written by a physician. All of these and more I will have as links in the show notes for you so that you can do some additional research. Another link that I will include in my show notes for you is a book written by Dr. Sylvie Stacy, 50 Non-Clinical Careers for Physicians, Fulfilling, Meaningful, and Lucrative Alternatives to Direct Patient Care. This is an extremely excellent book, not only to describe opportunities within the pharmaceutical industry, but also opportunities in many different industries, including healthcare, that Dr. Stacy does a great job of describing a variety of non-clinical roles. She provides information about what is most attractive about the jobs, what some physicians dislike most about the jobs, and expected pay ranges. It's a great resource. I'll include the link in my show notes, and it will take you directly to Amazon, where you can purchase your copy of the book. I think you'll find it extremely worth the time you spend reading it. That wraps up our show for today. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. Please remember to go to Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player. Subscribe to the show so you don't miss any episodes. I'd also invite you to join my private Facebook page, Physicians Beyond the Bedside. From time to time, I will be including links and information that will be very valuable to physicians who are looking to move beyond the bedside. I would also encourage you to leave any questions or comments that you may have on my website, physiciansbeyondthebedside.com. I'm always very interested in corresponding with you, taking your questions, and helping in any way that I can as you look for opportunities and roles that are best suited to your needs and your goals for your career. Please join me on my next episode, episode 12. I will be interviewing Marcia Caton, PhD. Marcia has worked in the pharmaceutical industry and, in a very interesting and fortuitous way, has begun helping physicians who are looking to transition to roles within the pharmaceutical industry. I thought it would be interesting to have Marcia on and give us some additional perspectives of how she goes about coaching and mentoring physicians who are looking to take advantage of this particular non-clinical role. So please join me in 2 weeks for Dr. Marcia Caton. Once again, thank you for listening, and good luck moving beyond the bedside.